Welcome to Functional Design and Closure. I'm Christoph Newman.
And I am Nate Jones.
We're here to help you use functional programming to make your life as a developer less frustrating and more fulfilling.
We're here to answer your questions about closure and functional programming. So what's on your mind? Do you have any questions that you might want to ask us? Are you stuck anywhere? Do your closure friends talk about nifty things that you want to know about? Or are you a closure developer and there's a technology that you want to know about? We want to know what your questions are.
You keep seeing those cool kids with those Lambda hats talking about weird things. What are those weird things? Or maybe you just want to know, where can I buy a t-shirt that has a giant Lambda on it?
That's on my bucket list.
Yes. If you have if you answered yes to any of those questions, we would love to hear from you. So send us a tweet at Closure Design. Or send us email at feedback@closuredesign.club. Or if you prefer a more interactive experience, we are also on Closurian Slack. And you can find us in our Closure Design channel there, which is Closure Design-podcast, where we are there to chit-chat with you about all the coolest geekery around closure.
Yes, definitely. Please come talk to us. All right. Well, this week's question is, how do I convince my coworkers to use Closure? Well, this is assuming that your coworkers are the developers, that your coworkers aren't lawyers or, you know, or are in the, not, to, not, yeah.
This Let's sounds like the kind of qualification that like a true programmer would add. Well, this is assuming that you have electricity and that you are programming for a living.
It reminds me of my favorite joke about being a programmer. You know, you can always tell someone's a programmer, but when they look both ways when they cross a one-way street.
Yes, yes.
All right. So back to our question. How would I convince my coworkers to use Closure? Well, I think the thing that I would start with is a teaser. You know, don't talk about, you know, the depths of functional programming or, you know, the great podcasts in the Closure community. But I would show something that works. You know, show them like a side project that you work on. You know, because there's nothing that quite, you know, trumps discussion or challenges that other than working code. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Most developers, well, at least developers I enjoy working with, the kind of developer who I would like to work with more and therefore convince to use Closure, they're yeah, always interested in learning new things. And so if you set up Closure as like this really cool thing that you're experimenting with, that you've been playing with, that is super cool, and then you show them something about it that's really cool. Like, oh, check this out. I got to show you this cool thing. So check this out. Okay, I'm running this program, and I'm editing this code, and look, I can change the function like while the program's running. You know, every developer I've worked with that I've showed that little party trick to is like, if they haven't seen this before, it's like, whoa, that's cool. You know, because it's a cool thing, right?
Yeah, I think even if you were to show someone who's like a Java, because JavaScript has the hot reload, like, hey, you can be editing code and it just like, you know, merges into your app that's running. There's still something that's even like you can keep taking it like up to the next level. You know, you go, well, how about this little bit of code or that little bit of code? And then here's my whole program. I can run my whole program all at once. You know, you can kind of, you know, do a bunch of different things that only being connected to your running program, like, you know, hip to hip, will allow you to do.
Yeah. So showing off this cool feature of developing in Closure, you know, gets people curious.
Yeah, and if they're curious, maybe then they'll want to know more.
Something that I have. I've done before is kind of building on that idea of curiosity. Back when I was working at HP as a developer in a big team, I was really curious about Erlang because it was all the hotness at the time. This is like mid-2000s or so. Mm-hmm. And so all this, it was like this resurgence of Erlang and very prominent projects. I think like React comes to mind, but various prominent projects were being coded in Erlang. And so I decided to just get a bunch of my programmer buddies, the people that I got along with the best, hey, let's get together and hang out at lunch once a week and we'll just go through programming Erlang together. And we were all trying to do the little exercises out of the book and we were sharing those exercises. And so it was just kind of like a, hey, this is a cool thing that we've heard of. It's kind of different. So let's just get together and let's just talk about it, right? And so it put functional programming in this category of like broadening your horizons, making yourself a better programmer. It's a learning experiment. And then it wasn't this thing that you're like stuck with or this like risky choice that somebody brought into the project, right? It framed it in the safe space to explore these, you know, wacky new ideas together.
Yeah, that's it's funny you should mention that because that's actually something that I did at my previous employer too. And actually, I was Clojure was the thing that I was trying to learn. And I think it's really great if you can show someone else something that you're working on in Clojure. But at the time, I didn't have anything that I was working on in Clojure because I didn't know Clojure well enough. So I was like, hey, let's just meet for lunch on Friday and just go through, well, initially it was the cones, the Clojure cones, and then we eventually graduated to foreclosure and exorcism. But it was really interesting to see which of my coworkers responded to that invitation, the ones that were more interested in learning something new. And it ended up being a lot of fun. And I actually ended up learning a lot from, you know, I started off where I kind of was the one who knew Clojure the most, but by the end, I was definitely not. I was learning from many of my coworkers because they had learned other aspects of the language or other idioms that I was able to learn from.
Yeah, that reminds me of what we were saying in the episode we had last week, where we were talking about finding somebody to go through this together with.
Oh yeah.
like our advice when you're getting started out in Clojure is find someone who you can get help from, interact with, you know, same thing. If you pool together in like a reading group or something at work, then as you all learn, you can feed each other new things. But if you already know it, we're assuming kind of coming into this question, you already know Clojure. Like if you're willing to just have a little bit of patience and structure it kind of like a reading group and an experiment where people can learn a fun new thing, then I've seen like a lot more success with that. I think you could look at this as you could look at the anti-pattern, right? And the anti-pattern is mm-hmm. where like you're writing microservices. So you just like up and decide, well, my microservice can be in Clojure. And then you just sort of foist it on the team, right? And then you guard your Clojure service. So I've seen this happen a couple of times. Like I was at a meetup talking to somebody who was at the meetup because they had a coworker who decided to up and write his microservice in Clojure and guarded it zealously for a year and a half and then quit and went to work for a different company. And now there's a service that's part of the microservice fabric they all have to deal with every day that no one knows how to maintain. And now they're just like, they hate Clojure, right? It's frustrated. And so he was the one who was the least frustrated by this and the most interested in learning. So he decided to take it on, but boy, you know, it was kind of felt very daunting. So maybe like, don't do it that way.
No.
Clojure by hook or by crook, you know?
Don't assume that someone else is going to be able to land, you know, jump on the grenade if you do move on. Yes, definitely, totally. I think like microservices, you would think that, oh, well, microservices, everyone's got their own domain. And, you know, it's the wonderful way of introducing a new language. But by doing it by yourself, you're pretty much guaranteeing that there's no one to help you convince your other program, your other developers, your other coworkers. I think if there's, you know, it might work out if there's like three or four, or maybe half the team, maybe even if the whole team is convinced to use Clojure, because there's kind of two steps to this. There's like convincing people that Clojure is a good thing to use, but then there's convincing them to actually use it, you know, because I've known many people that think Clojure is a good idea, but they don't necessarily want to use it on, you know, for their day job.
Oh, that's a really good observation. Yeah, there is sort of the engaging the curiosity to make somebody, well, not make, but to afford the opportunity that they come to believe that Clojure is a useful technology, right? And then yeah. And then going from there, there's a different set of obstacles to, well, should we use this on our team? You know, and if you can't get somebody curious and interested in Clojure, then just like trying to make it a part of the team is going to be really an uphill battle. Engaging the curiosity and kind of illustrating through example, like how Clojure is cool is the road to get people there.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of piggybacking on that, you know, don't introduce Clojure as a microservice until people are bought in. But one thing that I've had a lot of success with in the past is recommending solutions to problems that are in your work language, but that are inspired by Clojure. As a way of example, I had a coworker who was working on a Lambda function, you know, as in AWS Lambda, not as in Clojure. Oh, yes. Lambda.
Yes, that Lambda.
They stole our cool word.
They did. And, they stole it and changed it.
Yes.
How Orwellian of them.
but what he was trying to accomplish was to make a bunch of, you know, AWS API calls, and then make a decision based on the data that was returned from them, and then make a bunch of other AWS API calls, you know, as one does. And yes. And he was struggling with how to test the actual logic of his code. Like, he's like, I keep having to upload my function every time I change my code, and then, you know, go and set everything up again. And I said, well, how about if you structure your code where the top, this is all in Python, by the way, this wasn't even in, you know, JavaScript, which is the cool language to use in Lambda. And I said, well, why don't you just do all the API calls at the beginning and then pass the data into a function that, instead of taking that data and figuring out what it's going to do and then doing it, all that function does is then give back instructions as data, which is something that we've done in Clojure. Like, we talked about it pretty significantly in our posting to Twitter episodes, if you remember those. You go look in our back catalog on our website.
Yes. Link in the show notes.
Yeah, link in the show notes. We'll link in the show notes. But anyway, that was something that you kind of do in Clojure, and it really helped him understand how to solve the problem. And then I was like, oh, and by the way, that came from Clojure. And so he's like, oh, I see the mindset.
Right. So Clojure has these abstractions that it supports very strongly. And so there are ways of solving a problem in Clojure that are going to dovetail quite nicely with the way Clojure is sort of designed to be.
Yeah.
And then there's ways that are very difficult uphill battles. And then there's ways that are just completely excluded. But what's nice is the ways of solving the problem in Clojure, a lot of times you can find something that's analogous in a multi-paradigm language like JavaScript or Python, or languages that have weak support for functional programming, you know, and then it gets people thinking in that direction. Like, you're using the multi-paradigm aspect of the language to introduce, like, pull back the curtain a little bit, get them thinking. And so definitely I've had some success getting people curious about Clojure in that way, mm-hmm. by saying, oh, yeah, I solved it this way in Clojure. And because the solution, they can relate to the solution because the solution is in the language. And then you're saying, well, Clojure, help me find this. Then it's like, oh, tell me more. Like, that's interesting because the solution's interesting. So that they've already bought into something being interesting.
Yeah, the solution was easier to understand because of the design, and that was instrumented by Clojure. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I would say, like, in general, taking on functional programming in a serious way is enough of a switch that people really have to want to do it, right? And so if you want to get your coworkers to develop in Clojure, you have to, not everyone's going to want to switch to functional programming. Not everyone's going to want to do that. And so part of it is constructing opportunities to identify, if you will, like who's the most interested in taking that jump, you know? There's going to be, like, yes. You're saying, Nate, like for your lunch group, you know, there's definitely some developers who are not going to want to come to a lunch group to talk about some, you know, weird new programming thing. And there's developers who are going to want, right? So having that, it's like in economic terms, it's like a separating function, you know? It's a way of kind of identifying two different classes of people. Or not classes, but just two different, you know, temperaments or mentalities or just where people are at, you know? And then just going through it together, like you're saying, you know, community is a big thing. So you want to identify these people so you can kind of walk through it together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another thing that came to mind on the microservice thing is if there is, when you're making the jump from, oh, isn't Clojure cool? And you have a few people on the team who are kind of curious about Clojure and who are interested in Clojure.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're trying to make the jump to the next level where it's like, okay, we want to use Clojure for real, you know, using Clojure in anger, yes. So to speak.
Yes, anger.
Which I never understand that expression because it's just so happy.
Well, you know what they say, there's only two kinds of tools, those that you hate and those that you don't use.
Nice. Okay. And sorry. So I've had success with, if people are on board, then hey, I'm going to write this, it since I'm the more experienced Clojure person, I'm going to write this in Clojure. And then I prove it out in Clojure. I get this new little microservice, this new backend or this new front end. I like front ends too because they're very separable from the rest of the system. So they're great places for experimenting. So I'm going to write this new little service in Clojure. And then after I kind of get it propped up, then I'll do some pair programming or I'll like onboard another developer. I'll get them set up. I'll be like, okay, cool. So I got this bootstrapped. And now you can come join me and help me work on this. And so then I'll get another developer set up. And then that allows me to work like if I pair with them or I get them set up with the tooling so that they can get the editor integration and kind of show my workflow. And it lets me walk them through the steps of being productive on this thing. And then when they're good to go, it's like, okay, get another developer, get set up. And then after there's a few of you that are kind of set up and you can work with this code base, then I personally have found that it begins to spread a little more organically at that point in time too.
Yeah, I think that really helps. It's because it's not about building a fiefdom or a kingdom, you know, it's like where you own the code, you know, the more that you can bring others on and step them, like, so there's the land of the cones where, you know, you learn the syntax, but then you kind of hit a wall. But if it's like, hey, you know, I have this microservice that you're calling, you know, how about if you come over here and do a feature in here? And it really, the collaboration really opens it up, I think, for getting more people on board and helping them get past the hurdles into productivity.
Yeah, and I think that's the kind of a stumbling block that I've heard over and over again is people dive into a language like Clojure or Haskell or Erlang or something because it looks really exciting. They've heard of functional programming and they just don't realize how big of a switch functional programming is. And so then they get stuck and then they think it's the language's fault.
Right.
And it is a language, like them getting stuck is the language's fault because the language has chosen to eliminate, like categorically eliminate solutions that they as a developer have used for years, right?
And very so comfortable if, with. Yeah.
Yeah. If there isn't somebody there to kind of help you learn about the alternate routes now, the other way of doing things, then it feels very crippling. And so actually thinking of adopting closure as a social problem around demonstrating utility, like cool things, like this is how closure's helped me. This is how it's really neat. This is how it's been beneficial. Like, look at this cool stuff I made. Look at this cool stuff you can do too. So thinking of it more as that, as opposed to the technical superiority of immutability and functional programming and why XYZ paper has demonstrated that you can do X amount of processing in parallel due to functional semantics and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I can't remember how many times I've heard someone be like, oh yeah, a functional, there was a functional guy on my team, man, he made everyone hate functional programming because he just kept talking about it.
Yeah,
about all the,
I've heard
all
that
the academic,
many
you know.
Times.
Yeah.
Yes. Heard it many times. It's like you're showing up with a solution for somebody who doesn't know they have a problem.
Oh.
Right? And then you're taking that solution and you're just rolling it up into this tightly balled up newspaper and you're just whacking them over the head and you're like, oh, this isn't working. Let me try harder.
Let me
make the ball of paper, the roll of paper thicker.
Clearly, I need more papers.
Yeah. So kind of really building up curiosity and building up an excitement based on these cool new things that you can do. And if you're not really sure what those are, then it might not be time yet for you to begin to build support, right? Because maybe you're still getting on your own legs. I don't know. If you feel like you have some cool stuff that you've learned in closure, it's like you can start to share it, have a lunch group, spread it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That sounds good.
So we would love to hear from you, dear listeners. You know, how have you convinced your coworkers to use closure? For those of you who've been through that process, we would love to hear from you. Send us your answers, your thoughts, your ideas, your solutions, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. We'd love to hear more ways we can help convince people, or encourage people, or evangelize. Let's use better words, I guess, than convince. Convince sounds very rolled up paper-ish.
Persuade.
Yes.
Yeah, but get people excited about closure.
Yeah, that's a good one. Cool. And if you have any other questions that you would like for us to talk about, if any of the stuff we talked about today inspired a question, or if you're, again, if you're stuck, or if you have a problem that you want, we'd love us to talk about, just send it to us. You can either send us a tweet at Closure Design, or an email at feedback@closuredesign.club. You can reach out to us on the Closure Design Podcast channel on the Closurian Slack, where if you are between the hours of 8 and 5, there's a decent chance that you might actually hear a response from us within the next 24 hours.
Yes, 8 and 5, but because we're programmers, we're going to say Pacific time.
Oh, right.
Because it's between 8 and 5 somewhere. Right now, I guarantee it's between 8 and 5 somewhere. But yeah, we'd love to have you hang out with us in the Slack. Also, if you haven't already, go to closuredesign.club. Check out our past episodes. Check out the show notes for this here very episode, where you will find all the links to all the things that we talked about.
Yes. Thanks to our excellent show note writer. That's one of us. All right. It's been fun talking about a question. So next week, we'll be back with another question. Thanks for listening.